Booker Tov World. Today's daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yirat Kodesh, is daf Tzadi Zayin. And I'd like to just review with you the Mishnah again. And I would also ask if perhaps everybody could set aside a little, they used to have those index cards, pieces of paper. I don't know if you guys remember that stuff. They used to make them out of trees. Oh, man. And then they had these, like, sticks. You could actually... Oh, look at that. Look at that. Okay, we've got someone out of the past over here. Shmuel Chanina. There we go. So anyway, if you could get yourself one of those, maybe just a piece of paper and a pen or a pencil, and that way we could actually have a special list. Thanks. I'll take that, Akiv. So we could have a special list. You could have given me some Zoom before. We could have a special list of ta'arovas. That's what I'd like, for us to keep a list of all of the concepts that we're going to encounter very rapidly over the next few days. So let's just review that Mishnah on Amud Beis quickly. So if you cooked up the whole thigh, and it has a gidanasha in it, you didn't take the gidanasha out, what is the din of the eating the chai, the bnioris? So if there's enough of a notin tam, okay, so let's record those. First of all, we have a question of if yesh pekidim notin tam. That's your first question. So our Mishnah obviously holds that gidim do convey a significant taste. And we don't just see them as a piece of wood that's a little basically tasteless. Furthermore, we have another simple concept, which is no tintam. That is a shear of whether you could detect the taste in something else. So two completely different issues. Im yesh begidim no tintam, general question about whether things that are tough, like the gidanasha, and are not really something you eat, but do they have enough of a tam that the tam itself is considered to be usur, as opposed to just the item? So this Mishnah obviously agrees with the Shita that yesh beginim minotei tam, and therefore, im yesh ba minotei tam, if we have enough of a taste in the thigh meat, then the whole thing becomes usur. And how would we know? Since whatever taste the gid does have, it's not any different than the taste of the meat itself. Well, ketzad b'sharinota, kibbasar belefet. So basar belefet is an early idea that is a special halacha with the gidan nashe, as we'll see. And we don't as yet have the concept of shishin. And the din of shishin was a generalized halacha that was actually put into place later on, as we're going to see in the Gemara. And at this point, we say, okay, let's take the same amount of turnips that would be the size of the yarech, and then take the same size of meat, which would be the size of the gidanasha. If meat of that size would put taste into those turnips of the size of the yarech, then that is considered to be a tam di surah, and it would be us. Gidanasha shenit bashelim agidim. Now, we're getting into another issue. The next issue is the question, and please write this down, yavesh biyavesh. Yavesh biyavesh means where we're talking about a mixture that has no medium through which we would pass taste. So that's A. And B, it has actually items that need to be batal. And here, it's the items. It's not the taste. It's the actual gid hanasha itself. So that, for all intents and purposes, what we're looking at over here is a container that would have various gidim in it. Now, in the case of our Mishnah, we are talking about two different things in one, because we're talking about it was cooked together with other gidim, and then that part of the question would be the notein tam issue, but then there's the other issue, the actual gidan nashe. Would we be able to eat any of these other gidim if we can't identify the gidanash? And that would be a classic yavesh b'yavesh question. The Mishnah puts together two questions because it says, and you also cooked it. which means there was a medium. Cooking is a medium through which the taste is dispersed. And that's very important to understand. So bijol is a concept, and bijol is medium spread in heat. We also have medium spread without heat, which we're going to be discussing soon. And yovesh b'yovesh is non-medium and no spread. And here we put the two together. Now, for some reason, our Mishnah ignores the next concept, which is bitul berov. Normally, when you have a yovesh b'yovesh question, you simply go according to the rov. So let's say you would have two gidim that are kosher and one gid hadasha. The two gidim that are kosher should make it mutter for you to take out any of these gidim and eat it, because you can go according to the rov. That is a question that the Gemara is going to ask a little bit later. Why are we ignoring the rov? And the Mishnah says you cannot eat any of these gidim if you cannot recognize the gid hanasha. So that's a question. But in this case, the Mishnah says, Bizman shmakiro, if you can identify the gid hanasha, and you can take out the gid hanasha, and you can take any of the others as long as there is no notein tam. So that notein tam is the same shear that we had in the Reisha. But if you don't recognize the actual gid and you can't take it out, you can't eat the actual gidim, because they are yavesh b'yavesh, which Gemara hasn't explained why we don't go according to rov here. And the rest of the mixture, which would obviously, no way to confuse the gravy is clearly not a gid hanasha, so is the gravy aser? Well, the rotev is the same as the case in the reisha. If the rotev has the tam of the gid in it, so then it's also. How would we know if the rotev has the tam in it in this case? Well, obviously, if it's just water and we mixed it in there, whatever, we can have somebody taste it. But, of course, we couldn't have a Jew taste it because he would be eating Isser. So perhaps we can have a non-Jew taste it. That we are going to see in the Gemara. Now, the same thing is true about a chaticha shel nevela. If you're talking about a chaticha, we're talking about pieces, one piece and other pieces. So you've got one piece of nevela that got mixed in with other pieces of meat, which are kosher. Or you have one piece of fish, which is not kosher, and it was cooked together with other pieces of fish. It's the same thing. If you can actually identify the piece of meat that wasn't kosher, or the piece of fish that wasn't kosher, take it out, and then we apply the normal halacha of notein tam. But if you don't recognize which one it is, you can't identify it, so then kulan asurot, again, the same question, why are kulan asurot? That we have not yet decided. And the rotav, whatever gravy that you have in it, whatever liquid that you have, that would be dependent on the taste of it. So now let's take a look at the first point in the Mishnah, which was Shmuel's diuk that we learned yesterday. Omar Shmuel, the Mishnah is stressing nitbashel. So nitbashel means it was cooked with a medium. So this is the transference of taste with whatever, water, and water with spices, whatever it is you're making this particular roast with. So that's the only time that we're saying that we have to take a look and make sure that there's no problem of notei tam. But if it was nitzlaba, so you roasted it without any medium, you put it over the fire, so then you don't have any way of spreading the taste inside the fat. And actually what happens is that, as you know, that the meat actually shrivels as the fat leaves it and so on. So in this case, there's nothing to take the taste of the gid and put it into the meat. And therefore, in this case, kolef, you simply continue to take off pieces like they do in the shawarma places. Well, that's what a roasted thigh would look like if it were a thigh. And you keep slicing little pieces of meat off of it, peeling away gradually until you hit the actual gid hanasha. And then, obviously, that part you get rid of, and then you keep peeling away. But the meat itself is not usher, because it has not had the taste go through it. Now, this is a bit of a problem, because as we're going to see in many other cases in the Dinim of Tarot, and here come two new concepts for you to write down, there is a shear of spreading of taste, which comes from direct contact without a medium. And over here, Shmuel seems to imply that you can continue to peel the meat away until you get to the actual Gid HaNoshe, which seems to contradict the normal dinim of taste through contact. And the normal dinim of taste through contact, as we're going to see, depending on what we are referring to and the temperature and the material, either is dealt with what's called bichdei klipa. Bichdei klipa means the smallest peel that you could peel away in one piece. That would be what you'd have to call the contact part, and the contact part would be usur. And when Shmuel says you go all the way up to it, that's very unusual, which is why many of the Mefarshim understand that Shmuel didn't mean literally up to it, and he was taking for granted that the intelligent reader would apply the din of Kidei Klipa, or maybe even the bigger shear, which is called, please write down, Bichdei Nitila, and that would be an actual thickness of a thumb around the Gid HaNoshe is called the contact area. Now, it may be that the taste of a Gid HaNoshe, even if you hold Yesh Begidim Benotei Tam, because it's so tough and dry, maybe Shmuel was relying on Kidei Klipa and he doesn't require Kidei Netila, but how would he say that you could actually get all the way up to the Gid? So the only way to explain all the way up to the Gid is that even if you hold Yesh Begidim Benotei Tam, it's a Tam Kalush that would not transfer without a medium. We'll see those kind of halachas later on. So that's a possibility. Asks the Gemara, is it really the case that when you barbecue something over a fire and you don't have a medium to transfer the taste, that then you can just ignore it and just the actual piece don't eat? But we know that Ravuna Paskind, that if you roast a gedi, so take a young goat, and you roast it over the fire, and you didn't take the chalev out of it, so now you've got the chalev haklayot, so on, you can't eat the slightest piece of meat from that thing. Even if you take a piece all the way from the tip of its ear, which doesn't have any chalev and is very dry, you still are going to be eating isur of chalev. So how can you tell me that just because there's no medium to transfer the taste, that there won't be taste transferred in the entire piece of meat that you're eating? I don't understand what Shmuel was saying. Ah, that's different. Because remember, chalev, the whole point of chalev, is that it is pure fat. And fat melts and it bubbles through the entire piece. So shayne chelev de mifa'afeya. So we have this concept of mifa'afeya, which is another concept, which literally means bubbling, but over here it means actually that it penetrates the entire thing, and therefore it's different than the Gid HaNoshe, which doesn't actually have fatty parts. But wait a second. The Gid HaNoshe does have fatty parts. Hold on, I'm confused. Didn't we say that the shuman of the gid is usur? I mean, it's usur bin Rabbanan only, perhaps, but it's still usur. So how can we ignore the shuman? That doesn't make sense. The shuman of the gid is enough to usur it, isn't it? So why are we ignoring that? So Tosus asks that question. Why don't we worry about the shuman of the gid, which is mifa'afeya, and therefore Shmuel should not have made this distinction between boiling an entire thigh with the Gid HaNoshe or roasting it? Because even though maybe the Gid HaNoshe itself won't asr the roasted thigh, but the shuman of the Gid HaNoshe will asr the roasted thigh. So there's two possibilities with this. The Rabbeinu Tam suggests that the reason is that the Shuman of the Gid itself is not really all that oily. It doesn't melt, and it's not Mifa'afea, which seems a little bit difficult to believe, but okay, that's what you have to say. However, there is a much more reasonable answer that Tosfos brings, which he brings from the correct years according to Bach, he brings from the Reform, and he says that it's very simple. Since the Rabbanan were the ones who created the Isra of the Shuman Hagid, they never were more machmer on the Shuman Hagid than on the Gid itself. So wherever the Gid itself doesn't aser, the Shuman Hagid doesn't aser either. And therefore, we don't have to worry in this case about the Shuman element, which was the Derabbanan. Okay. Anyway, continuing along, so now we've got this difference between the Gid Hanasha, which is a dry, not oily substance, doesn't spread without a medium, and therefore would only be Usher and Bishul. What's your problem, Al? Making problems again.
Shuman and Chalev?
Yes, Chalev is treif, and Shuman isn't treif. But in the general...
It's Chalev, but...
Well, please let me finish, sweetheart. The concept of the word Shuman just means fatty. And here where we're talking about the physical context of it, it's the Shuman. If you're talking about the halachic concept of it, so then... You would be careful to say chalev or shuman. There isn't any technical chalev because it's just the derabbanan that even the normal shuman is usher. So we don't call that. But again, you can use the word shuman just meaning fatty, right? As opposed to fat. So
there's no chemical. There's no difference in the chalev and shuman in terms of the properties.
We saw very clear differences. Tutav, krum, niklav. We had those dinim before. How do you differentiate between things that are called chalev and things that are called shuman as to whether it's chemical differences that I don't know.
I'm saying we could say that is a difference, but chalev is mafateh, shuman's not.
No, there's no, that difference does not exist. No, chalev is mafateh, shuman is mafateh. It's the oiliness of it that's mafateh. Okay. Anyway, ask the Gemara. So now we're coming out that in the event that you have a mifafea of chalev, then Shmuel would never have said that you can cut all the way down to the chalev. That he wouldn't have said. He's saying you can cut all the way down to the Gid Hanasha because it is not mifafea. But wait a minute. Is it true that if it would have been chalev, then it would have ossered even the entire piece all the way to the tippy toes or tippy ears? The Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, once it happened that Rabbi Yochanan was in the Beit HaKnesset of Ma'on, and when Rabbi Yochanan would come, everyone would bring whatever shilas they had, and they brought him a gedi, indeed exactly this case, that they had not removed the chalev of the klayot, and they had roasted it together with the chalev, brought it to Rabbi Yochanan, and he said, oh my gosh, he said the same thing that Shmuel said. He said, Kolefa ochel achimagia lechelbo. So he said to do to this chalev the same thing that Shmuel said to do to the Gid Hanasha, which doesn't make any sense because we just said that if you've got chalev, it's going to be mifafea and otzer. So apparently even chalev doesn't really mean it. Now here, if you're talking about chalev, and he used the same lotion of kolefa ochel, he obviously was not being matirit without the problem of Kidei Klipa. So, again, it seems to be that he wasn't saying exactly what he meant, and he took it for granted you would understand it. But as I said, we'll look as we go through the sugya. Says the Gemara, that particular animal was a particularly lean kind of animal, and therefore it does not have the mifa'afea. And since the mifa'afea is what asers, and the amount of actual fat in that very lean animal was not enough to aser the whole thing. So because of that, it was not a problem of chalev. Rav Huna Bar Yehuda says, that's not the point. The point is that you've got it mixed up. That's the reason that you're getting confused here. Rabbi Yochanan wasn't asked about an actual goat, a kid that was roasted with chalev. It was a kidney that was roasted in its chalev. And that is very different because there's a very thick membrane between the actual kruya, as we saw it before, and the chalev. And therefore, we didn't answer it because in this case, it is not going to spread. And even though we said before that the membrane itself is usur, that's eating the membrane. But the membrane itself, even though it's usur because of chalev, it is not the type of chalev that's mifafea. It's thick membranous. And because of that, it wasn't enough to usur the kidney. And therefore, your case had nothing to do with Shmuel's case. Ravin Baravada says, no, that wasn't the case either. The case actually was a kilchit be'ilfas havet. So a small kilchit fish, which is treif, they found it in a shalan pot with the meat. And they came to ask Rabbi Yochanan whether they're allowed to eat it. And Rabbi Yochanan said, litame kapila armoa. So this is a new concept. Kapila armoa is a reference to a goyeshe chef, maybe. This is the preferred understanding. So a kapila is a professional cook, according to this way of understanding it, which is the way Tosfos uses it. And a professional cook is going to not risk his reputation. And therefore, if you ask this professional goyeshe cook, do you taste any fish in this? If he tells you no, and then it turns out that there was a taste of fish, this guy is going to ruin his reputation. Oh my gosh, this idiot couldn't even recognize a kilchis fish in a chalent pot. So who's going to hire him for the next restaurant? So therefore, you can rely on him. This is how Tosfos understands. Rashi understands a kapila does not mean necessarily a professional cook, and it just simply means someone who would be cooking. And the reason that you can trust him is only because, and this is how Rashi understands the halacha, it's only because he is Mesiach Lefi Tumo, meaning you make a comment that would elicit from him a description of does it have a taste or not. You don't let him know that you need to know in terms of the halacha, because then he'll try to mess you up. So it's only Mesiach Lefi Tumo. Now, halacha lemaisa, we generally understand kapila armoa to be Tosfos's pshat in kapila armoa. And if you cannot find a real chef, then you can rely on Rashi to ask any goy who has some shaychus to cooking and does his own cooking and will be able to identify taste. But then it would have to be a Mesiach Lefi Tumo situation. So actually, both of these approaches are usable. But meanwhile, you've got to be writing down kapila armoa. And Mr. Gavi, we are way ahead of you today. This is what happens even 10 minutes into these sugyas. Oh my gosh, how are you going to catch up? Everybody, because you weren't here, everybody had to take out a piece of paper and a pen and start writing down Gavi ideas. But the truth is, we want everyone to have a special section. Even Gavi himself should have a special section for Ta'aruvas, because all of those concepts that we're going to be introducing here are going to be on that. So that we spoke about whether Yesh Beginim Benos in time, which you've already written down in the general Gavi rule, but this should be your special Taroves. The concept of Noten Tam itself, which is not Nogea Yesh Beginim Benoten Tam, it's a separate idea, even though the words are the same. We've spoken about Yovesh B'Yovesh. We've spoken about Kedei Klipa, Kedei Nitila, Bosar Belefet, and Kapila Armo'o, and Mifa'afea. That's what we've discussed so far today. And those are the first parts of our list. Yesterday, and I'll bring it up again, yesterday we talked about the Diak and the Mishnah, which I didn't want to confuse with today, but I'd like the concept to be there. And that was an Isser Davuk, where we said that since the ratio of the Mishnah seems to not talk about, in the Basar Belefet, it only talked about the actual thigh meat. Why didn't it talk about including, as we're going to see later, including everything in the pot, all of the water, all of the gravy, all of the spices, and perhaps even the thickness of the pot, which we're going to be discussing later. And we said it, there are many on the diet from here, that there is a special din where, as in a gidanasha, something is part of another thing, when the gidanasha is embedded in the thigh, that we look at the immediate area as being dovuk to it, and therefore it would have to have enough to be batal in the immediate area. Okay, we'll be talking more about that before, but that's already an issue that is raised by the Achronim. So, in this case, we learned from Rabbi Yochanan, you can have a non-Jew, and you can rely on him, according to Tosfos, if he's a professional, and according to Rashi, even if he's not a professional, if it's Mesiach Lefitum. Omar Rava, Mireish Avikakashav, you know, until I heard what Rabbi Yochanan had to say, I never understood this following halacha. Kedeira should be Sheba Basar, Lo Yivasheba Halaf. So now, this is a pretty Nogia halacha. If you have a fleshik a pot, don't use it to cook milk. But what if you did? In Bishel, if you did cook milk in it, so then it would be Benotain Tan. So if the meat that was in the taste of the meat in the pot was notable in the milk, so then it would be Osir Mitam Basir Bechola. Same thing would be true if in a Barnea home where you've got these special pots that are marked Truma. So, okay, that's for cooking Truma in. And then you cooked Chulin in it. Oh my gosh. So then is a non-Kohen allowed to eat it? Well, it's the same problem. If it's a Truma pot, Lo Yavasha Bechulin. In Bishel, if you did, then it would be the same question. Is there a notate tongue? Now, I always was bothered, says Rava, but I understand the case of the Truma, because when it says benotain tam, all you got to do is ask Barnea, do you taste any Truma in this? And he's allowed to taste it, so that's not a problem. But who do you ask about the Basar Becholov? I can't have somebody taste it and say, so what do you say? How does it taste? It tastes great, just like meat and milk. Well, he wouldn't be allowed to taste it. So everybody is osir. So who would we ask? Basar Becholov, who's going to taste it for me? Mantoimle. Now that I heard Rabbi Yochanan say a kapila arma is reliable, so how should the Amr Rabbi Yochanan samchina na kapila arma? Obviously, that was the meaning of the Braita Ochanami samchina na kapila arma to determine the Basar Becholov status. Omar Rava, another thing that Rava said, and this is a very broad statement. There are times when the Rabbanan said, taste it. And if it tastes kosher, it's kosher. So that's the taste is defined by actually tasting it. Like we just had. Have Barnea taste it. Does it taste like Truma or not? Now, the fact that Barnea always says it tastes like Truma is no cause for suspicion that perhaps he might want to eat it himself because, okay, so that would be Taima. Now, they also said there were cases, the Kapila, like we just said, if you cannot have somebody taste it because it's Isser, or there's no coin around, you could rely on a Kapila Arma. And there's other times, which we nowadays have, and this is a new din that the Gemara of Avodah Zarah brings that we were Mechadesh, that we were Koveya, a din of Shishim. So that even though before we had that din, we would actually first go through the tasting tests. If it was possible to find the Kohen for Truma, if you had a Kapila Arma, it would be the taste. And if you couldn't taste it, it would be the metaphor, so to speak, test. In other words, turn the gid into meat and turn the thigh into turnips, that kind of thing. So we would do a similar test, but on other issues that were the same. But that was all before we had the din of Shishim. Now that the Chachamim were Koveya, that Shishim is Mevatel, all tastes of Isser other than special cases of Tavlin, as we'll see, where you're able to detect things in very small amounts, But if it's normal iser food, then shishim is always going to be mevatalet. So sometimes the rabbanan say shishim hilkach. So here, let me explain where to apply the different dinim. If you've got a min b'she'eno mino, so you've got two things that are actually different tastes, would be possible to taste whether it's in it or not, and it would be heter. So in other words, if you have truma, which is essentially mutter for a kohen, and you've got wine of truma, and it fell into, let's say, porridge that is cooling. So then you go ahead, betaina. So you have a kohen tasted. You can have someone that is to him, etc. What about if it's isura, which is also to all? So like the case that we just had, a basir b'chalav. So if it's isur, how would you be able to taste that? Well, you'd have the kapila arma. And what about in a case of a min b'mino? In a min b'mino, you cannot taste it because both things taste exactly alike. So there it doesn't matter whether it was something that is mutter for a kohen or there's a goy, there's no way to taste it. Or in a case of a min b'she'eino mino, but you cannot actually have a Jew taste it and there's no leker kapila, there's no chef around to ask. So nowadays we have our overall psak. If it's a 1 in 60, then it would be kosher. And as I mentioned to you yesterday, a very cute way of being merames to that shear is that noten tam is always called not. Nun tet, noten tam. Noten tam is maximally the 59 nun tet. At the moment it's 1 in shishim, at that point it's water. Now there was a case of Atmahata de Imlicha Beresh Galuta Begidanasha. So they had, there's always problems in the Resh Galuta's home because he had these crazy avadim that would always do stuff wrong. And so they found these thighs that had all been salted, and they were salted, heavy salting, to make delicious kinds of salted meat. And they had all been salted together with the Gidan Nosha, but they weren't cooked. So what was the din? Well, Ravina said, actually, you're not allowed to eat them. You have to throw them out. Whereas Rav Acha Barav, he said they're mutter. They came and they asked Mar Bar Rav Ashi, and Mar Bar Rav Ashi said, I can tell you that my Abba, meaning Rav Ashi, had a Maisa like that, and he said that it was mutter. Said Rav Acha Barav to Ravina, why do you think it's usser? It wasn't cooked in at all, and therefore there shouldn't have been any way of transferring the taste. So I know why you think it's usser. You think it's usser because of the psak of Shmuel. Now here is another very important concept in Tarovet, and that is maliach harehu kiroteach. So that is one part of it. Anything which is salted, and we're not talking about a little bit of salt, we're talking about salting as preserving it in the salt, it has the same din as if it's hot in terms of absorption. So salting seems to do exactly what it is that cooking does. That's, I bet, what you think, right? The rest of what Shmuel said is that pickling, kavush, and if you pickle something, it's as if you boiled it, right? But that itself shows why you're wrong. Because Shmuel himself said in our Mishnah, when do we say that the Gidan Nasha is osur in the entire thigh? Note, said Shmuel, that the Mishnah specified shinit barshel. Didn't he say that? That it was boiled. And you're claiming that this is the equivalent of boiled? If the tzli is excluded, as Shmuel said, aval nitzlaba, if it was just broiled, so then kele v'orchel ad shemagia legid, so then you can just keep peeling away until you get to that gidan usher, then why in this case is it actually usher? It should be mutter in this case. And this is obviously, I know what you're going to tell me. You're going to tell me, well, you know, it says that it's hot. It doesn't mean it's hot like in a barbecue. It means it's hot like in a chowin pot. That's what he means. That's ridiculous. That's not what he means. Because v'chitema ma'kiroteach tekomer, what did Shmuel mean when he said that if it's salted, it's hot? That he meant it has a din kiroteach de mevushal. And it's as if you actually cooked it up. That's not true. Because the next part of what Shmuel said is that if it was pickled, then it's like it was boiled, which means that the first part, which was saying it's hot, means it's hot, but not mevushal. In which case, if it's not mevushal, then it's sli. And according to Shmuel himself, it wouldn't be usher. That means mechlal deroteach, when he said that if it's salted, it's kiroteach, he meant it's kiroteach of tzli, dry heat, and therefore it would not answer the entire thing. And the Gemara concludes with kasha. Ravina didn't have a response to that, and because of that, we don't paskin like Ravina. We actually paskin that melicha is not a medium, and therefore all it does is it creates an iser of that which is right up against it. But it's not going to be mifafea in cases of malicha. Yes, sir, Bersha Reuven.
Why don't we consider, even with tzliyah, the natural fluids within the yaret, moving around like this, they are medium themselves?
Because we don't have that much fluid, I guess, that we consider to be a real medium. Remember that there's another concept, which is, we'll get to, which is called torut. Torut means that when there's an internal fluid that's being exuded, the material that's exuding does not have time, so to speak. It's busy. Torut, it's busy in exuding things, and when it's busy exuding things, it doesn't absorb things. So that we'll see that klal later on. And here, too, the natural fluids that are part of the meat that are going to come out, while you heat that, it's torut at that point to be motzi. The same thing is true of dam, as we'll see later on. That when things are torut, they are not going to absorb. That, by the way, is the reason that you don't end up with tarfus every time you broil something and blood comes out all the time together with the meat, right? And you didn't do malicha when you do tzli, maybe you do because you just bought it in a butcher and they're malicha, everything. But normally, you don't, if you just have meat that you shechted, you don't need to do a malicha when you broil it because the heat actually causes the blood to come out. And therefore, the question is, but it's true, the blood is coming out, but as it slides down the outside, once it came out, then it's already called dam that is usser. So why isn't that blood reabsorbed as it's on the surface and asur the entire piece of meat, which would mean we'd never be able to roast meat without first doing a malicha? So that...
You could ask the same question about malicha itself.
The same question of malicha, which Shmuel's din here. So that's all the din of hoyel detride. Once something is torah to be motzi, it isn't actually absorbing. That's why, indeed, you can't leave it too long in the malicha. Because then it starts, if it stops being motzi dam, so now it's going to start absorbing things, and there you'd have a problem. Okay, anyway, but all of these things are for our future learning. Let us continue today's daf. Omar Rebbe Chanina, you should know that when you're talking about shishim is not just the meat. Shishim is in everything. So let's say you want to see if you've got 60 heter against the iser. Well, it's not just a piece of meat that the milk fell onto. You have to include misharin, berotev, ubekipa, ubechatichod, ubekedera. You include every absorbing substance that is there. So the rotav would be the gravy, or if it's a soup, a looser rotav, whatever it is, but the liquid part. The kippah. Now, what exactly is kippah? Kippah is what you would call the scrapings. Because at the bottom of the pot, you've got this sediment of pieces, of small, tiny pieces of meat that have come out, right? It's actually quite tasty. Many people are, you know, they'll scrape the pot and eat the scrapings because that's the tastiest part. So all of the various spices have come down there and the little pieces of meat that have fallen to the bottom of the pot and thick gravy and so on. And that forms a very thick coating over the pot, which is easy to burn and hard to get off, and don't put it in your dishwasher and expect to get good results. Better to scrape it off, which is why they call it the scrapings. And therefore, you've got to include that in the shishim that are connected to milk. So you've got the rotav and the kippah and all of the pieces of meat that are there that are all kosher. We'll see about the actual piece of meat that the milk falls on, whether there's a difference in that actual piece or not. That we're going to be getting into with Bozer B'Cholav. But right now, we're just at Taruvah's land. And the Kedera itself, which includes the pot. My gosh. So even, it seems to be saying, even the thickness of the pot would be included in the heter, which now the milk falls into. So some say that when Rabbi Chanina was talking about pot, he was referring to the actual metal of the pot or whatever it was, the ceramic of the pot, and he meant the kedera atzma, so that we know that it's going to get absorbed into that the same way that it gets absorbed into food. So that means that it is actually less concentrated because it's, so to speak, not only watered down, but it's potted down. And therefore, we should include the actual thickness of the metal or the ceramic, and that would be, if it's shishim, together with that, so then it wouldn't be aser. But ikeri amre, some say it's not the pot itself, it's only the food that had been absorbed in that pot, but the actual metal doesn't absorb the taste the way that food does, and therefore, if you can assume, of course, it would mean that you'd have to know. If, let's say, you know that originally something fell into this pot that was usser, and you know that it was the shear of a kezias, right? Or let's say, if we're talking about shishim, so you know that it was 60, and now there's only 50 of it. So that means that 10 of it was absorbed in the pot. That would be the only case that we're speaking about. And that's not a very practical case, because in just about 100% of the cases that come to ask whether this is kosher or not, you are presented with a current mixture. And once you're presented with a current mixture, so then, as we're going to see later on, the isura bala, the teira lo bala, in other words, it's a proportionate, whatever's going to be in the pot is proportionate to what's inside the pot. So it's irrelevant, as Rashi points out. In almost every single case, it's completely irrelevant. And therefore, this is not really a meaningful issue. Because whatever was absorbed, if it's talking about b'mayda bala kedera, so then it would be both isur bala and etera bala in the same proportions as what's in the pot. So Rashi says, effectively, this turns the halacha into being meaningless in almost all cases. Now, there is, again, before we come up with our magic din of shishim, we know that when we talked about the Gidan Nasha, the shear of the estimation was basar balefet, since we couldn't actually taste it. So we looked at basar balefet. What about other things? So Rabbi Yochanan is quoted here as saying, the din of basar balefet is miyuchad as the model for the gedanasha in meat. Other things, kol isur in Shabbat Torah, we look at the isur as if it's very sharp. And what is it? The sharp things, you look at it as if it's onions or leeks, things that have very sharp tastes. So in a case where you cannot actually taste the thing itself, maybe, again, because it was min b'minai, but whatever the halacha was, you didn't have, or was this, you didn't have to kapila. The typical model is to take the iser, turn the iser into an onion, and then See if you would taste an onion that was mixed into whatever this was mixed into. Would you be able to taste that amount of onion if the iser were onion? If you wouldn't be able to taste the onion, then it would be bot. And again, this was prior to the shishim shiur. So that would mean that at that time, a gid anasha would be modeled as basar belefet, and other isurim would be modeled as batzal v'kaflot in whatever it is that they are mixed. So if, let's say, you've got cooking potatoes and this iser falls in, which cannot be tasted, so then it would be, pretend that that iser was batzal, see if you could taste that. And if you could taste that, then this would be us. Omerle Rebabala Bayin. Well, I mean, I'm assuming that they chose the din of batzal v'kaflot because those are very pungent foods. Well, I mean, why did they choose that? They could have chosen things that are much more powerful than onions. Why not use pepper? L'sharina b'pilpilin or tavlin. We're over there. Even if it was 1,000 times as much, you'd still be able to taste it. Says Abaya, that's the whole point. The idea over here is that things that are not themselves spices, I mean, maybe you've got orla spices or whatever, but something that is not itself a spice is never going to be more pungent in a different food than onions and kapalot. And therefore, the chachamim, before we came up with the shishim, they said, if you're going to use a standard model, let's make a standard model. And the standard model was batzal v'kaflot. So as you can see, the actual halacha evolved from tasting into modeling into a general shear of shishim, which makes it a lot easier, even though it may make it a lot more chomor in cases where you wouldn't have tasted it. But nowadays, we don't have all of this complication. Amar Rav Nachman. Now, we've got another question, and that is, sometimes the iser itself may be different than the taste of the iser. Let me show you what I mean. You're talking about a gid anasha, and you want to tell whether you've got 60 keneged gid anasha, so then the gid anasha itself is not considered to be part of the 60. So basically, you would need a total of 61 pieces. 60 keneged the gid anasha and the gid anasha. So the total volume would be 61 times the unit, right? But what about if you're talking about a kechal? Now here we've got a fascinating issue. A kechal is an udder. And the udder of the cow contains milk inside of it. Wow. So now the question is the meat of the udder considered to be one of the 60 keneged the taste of the milk that's in the udder? Now that is quite a question. Can you include the udder itself as something that is actually mutter? The din over there is that it's still batal b'shishim, but you count the udder as part of the shishim because the meat of the udder isn't aser, and therefore you've got the udder plus 59 additional amounts of meat the size of the kechal, and therefore you will have 60-1 in terms of the taste. So that is a unique situation. If you've got a bunch of kosher eggs and a non-kosher egg that was cooked up. There, too, you need 60 eggs to one. You don't include the actual egg in the 60. So now, the question is, the egg we're going to deal with later, why we're bringing it up, and does it mean a non-kosher egg? All that we'll discuss tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem. But here, the issue of the kechal is that we've got two separate things. We have the milk that is in the milk-producing nodes. I forgot what they're called. Avioli, I think, is the word for it. It's the same word that's used in the lung for the air, the small air spots where the exchange of oxygen and carbon dioxide goes on. Is that the word you remember? Alveoli? Nobody knows? I think that I think it is either alveoli. Let me look it up on the internet here.
Alveoli. Plural, alveolus is singular.
The alveolus?
Alveolus and alveoli is
great.
Plural.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay, so those are the areas of the milk in the udder, but the udder itself is meat. So it's a fascinating situation. But Rabbi Yitzchak Barei de Mesharshia says something remarkable. The cow, even though we're including the meat of the cow to be part of the shishim, connected the taste of the chalav, the cow itself, even if there is shishim together with the cow, the cow itself always remains usur, even though the other meat, the other 59 pieces, are mutter. But this cow is permanently usur, and it doesn't matter, even according to most Rishonim, whether we've got shishim keneged, the actual milk, even without putting the udder into it. We will never be matir the udder. Why is that? Because even though the milk wasn't enough to aser the meat of the udder of the meat will definitely be asering any of the milk that was left in the alveoli, and therefore you're always going to be eating some basar b'cholav, because the milk will be basar b'cholav, not the meat. And since you can't clear that out completely, and right at the beginning you cooked up the milk that was usher b'cholav, you cooked it up and it was absorbed into the meat of the udder. And therefore, we always usher eating the cow itself, because then you might eat it before you were able to get rid of all of this. Or if you had cooked it before, then it already had absorbed that usher and there's no way to get it out. And another implication of that is, if you're telling me that the chal atzmo is usur, that would mean that if the chal falls into another pot that has, again, shishim, if it doesn't have a full shishim, it's going to usur the pot, whatever is in that pot, because since the udder itself is usur, it also usurs. And Rav Ashi wanted to know that you should know that when we were learning in Rav Kahana's yeshiva, Iboilan, we asked what that means. Ki misha'arinan b'didei misha'arinan, we're measuring against that udder when it fell into another pot. And we say it becomes bato oni b'shishim. Does that mean bato b'shishim against the entire kechal? Or does it mean that we're our Meshayer B'shishim keneged the amount of milk that we assume had gotten out of the chal into the mixture of the meat? And we were told this, or the Gemara answers, what kind of weird question is that? Isn't it pshita de b'didei Meshayerinan? How in the world would you know to be talking about how much milk had come out of that udder that had become usur in the original mixture? Of course, it would have to be against the entire volume of the udder. Because ibim adenefik mine, if you're telling me we'll only aser keneged the amount of milk, how would you ever know what the amount of milk is? So if Rav Nachman said that we're going to be mevatel the udder in shishim, what he meant was that we need shishim keneged the whole udder, because otherwise there'd be no way for us to apply that halacha. But wait a minute. That doesn't make sense, says the Gemara. If you are assuming that when an udder falls in, then the amount of milk that comes out is keneged the entire volume of the udder, so then why would it be ossering something if it falls into another pot, if you're going to assume that all of the milk that it contained came out in the first pot? Well, even the Omer of Yitzchak Barei de Mesharshia chal atzmo asur. The meaning of the point of Rav Yitzchak Barei de Mesharshia's entire psak was that we treat the other itself as usser. It means exactly what it says, not that it is usser, because of the fact that there's a chashash that you're going to be eating the milk that's in it, which became usser because of usser b'chalav initially. No. He meant shavua rabbanan kechaticha denevela. This is the first time that we meet up with this concept, which is kechaticha denevela. Now, we're going to see that that has tremendous implications in many, many dinim. The most obvious one is, what is the halacha of basar b'cholav if that falls into something else? So let's imagine you had a piece of meat, and that piece of meat had some milk that fell on it and was not batel b'shishim, but we know exactly how much milk fell on it. So 2 ounces of milk fell on this piece of meat and ossered it because it was a small piece of meat. Wasn't shishim there connected to 2 ounces of milk? Now that piece of meat falls into a pot of meat. How do we estimate it? Do we take a look at the amount of the 2 ounces of milk and now say, now we've got 2 ounces of milk in the entire mixture? Or do we say, oh, heck, the piece of meat that fell in was completely osur. We treat it like a nevela. So then once it's basar b'chalav, it's not the meat that's osur, the chalav that's osur. It's the piece that's osur, and that thing is called a nevela. And therefore, you'd have to say the entire piece is a nevela, and you would now need 60 pieces connected the entire original piece and not connected the 2 ounces of milk that had fallen into it. Now, the question is this a general din? That once we would paskin that something is usher because it absorbed isser, it all becomes a nevela? Which is what we seem to be saying over here. The udder is going to be a din of a nevela, and it is always going to be completely usser. Or do we say, no, we squeeze out the isser into the entire mixture. So it's true by basar b'chalav, you can't squeeze out the isser because the whole thing is usser. But you could squeeze out the isser of, let's say, the kilkis fish, and that is called, and here this goes into your list, efsher l'sochato. Can you squeeze isser out? Literally, sochato means to squeeze it out. Can you squeeze isser out once it's been absorbed? And that has very important applications to the whole halacha of a second mixture, where we now add additional heter against that isser. So we're introducing a lot of new kind of ideas. Obviously, as we go along, we're going to be meeting these ideas in detail in the Gemara, but this is the type of thing that we're raising right now. Now, when it gets to the egg questions, we will look at those egg questions tomorrow, because the Shaila is, do eggs really have a taste when they're boiled with other eggs? And that seems to be a problem in the sugya that we just had, all to be excitingly part of tomorrow's daf. Meaning that I wish you a wonderful day at this point, and that you have a chance to review all of these wonderful new ideas and maybe even put them into a very beautiful computer-generated, lovely parchment type of decoration to hang right above your desk. Of course, you didn't want to waste that expensive paper, but meanwhile, you've just got all of these concepts. I don't know how many we introduced today. Seems to me it must have been at least 10 different concepts, but Richie will be able to tell you immediately how many concepts, like those AIs.
Nine concepts, Ruby.
9 concepts. Okay, there we go. Come on, Ari, pass me those blocks. Hey, what? Okay, have a wonderful day, everyone, and b'sorot tovot. B'sorot Hashem, we should be able to be zocher to meet tomorrow. Go to it.